Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, January 24th, 2020. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Friday. Yay.
It is indeed. I'm very excited about it as well. Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Happy Friday.
And also to you. I actually, John, want to start with you. As is the case most Fridays, you've got particle debris to talk about. And I think there's something here that we definitely want to discuss a little further. So tell us about what you've got for particle debris this week.
Well, the lead is two products that seem to be in the wings that are almost certain to come out. 9to5 Mac reports that there's going to be a analog to the new 16-inch MacBook Pro. And that is the 13-inch MacBook Pro update with the scissors keyboard. Whether that will go up to the next integer size and be a 14-inch, they did not speculate. People have been referring to it as the 13-inch MacBook Pro, so maybe there's not going to be a bump in the screen size. But definitely, people are waiting for the hardware escape key and the better battery life and the scissors action keyboard, which will make the 13-inch MacBook Pro a very lovable product, I think. My sense from the 16-inch MacBook Pro is Apple reimagined and re-engineered the quality and the design of the MacBook Pro series. And this 13-inch is going to hit a sweet spot when it comes to price, because the 16-inch is already pretty nicely priced. Mm-hmm. And expect the 13-inch MacBook Pro to be very attractive to people who've been waiting and kind of sitting on their hands, mulling over the keyboard situation. So I think there's some pent-up demand, and I think the design's going to be appealing to people. Mm-hmm. And I might even get one myself, because my MacBook from 2015 is getting kind of old and long in the tooth.
So is mine.
I'm ready for a new one.
That's so, what I have, is mid-2015 MacBook Pro. And
mine is just a MacBook.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about my uncertainty about upgrading, and the big reason was MagSafe. We talked about that on a previous show, and there are options out there for people who still want MagSafe on a USB-C machine, so that makes me feel a little bit better. But also, like, I wasn't interested in upgrading on if they were going to keep giving me that keyboard, because I've typed on that keyboard, I've spent time on that keyboard, and I hate that keyboard. So
I always liked the keyboard.
I know you did. It makes me angry, because it always sounds like I'm angry when I'm typing. So I'm glad to hear that they might rev it. I wonder, though, if perhaps, stick with me on this, I wonder if perhaps the 13-inch machine will physically be a smaller device. And the reason I wonder that is because when I look at my 13-inch MacBook Pro right now on the screen, I have a fair amount of bezel all the way around the screen. And I've looked at the 16-inch. I have a friend who upgraded from the 17-inch MacBook Pro to the 16-inch MacBook Pro. He held out until there was a bigger one. And there's very, very, very little bezel around that 16-inch screen. So I wonder if the 13-inch screen, if the machine itself, is going to end up being a little bit smaller because they can put a little less bezel around the screen and make the device a physically smaller piece of hardware to carry around with you. I wonder if it's going to be a little more like the 12-inch or not. I just wonder.
I don't see that happening. I think the larger case design, maybe a little thicker on the 16-inch, gave them better battery life, and I think they're going to want to stay with maybe a 13.4 moving up to a 14-inch and a slightly bigger case to match. And better battery life. I don't see them trying to miniaturize the MacBook 13-inch MacBook Pro anymore. I think that's because, in my experience, people who have a 12-inch MacBook or an 11-inch MacBook Air are hungry for a little bit larger screen. Mm-hmm. And that Pro gives them that.
Well, it would be the same size screen, but with less bezel, then the physical dimensions of the computer could be a little bit smaller. And I wondered if maybe they would do that. Yeah, I'm just wondering out loud. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but I wonder. That's all.
The other thing that's headlining in particle debris is an article by Debbie Wu and Mark Gurman at Bloomberg.
Yeah.
just about nailing the case from Apple sources that the new low-cost iPhone is going to enter production in February and ship in March. And this is the legendary, mythical iPhone SE 2.
Okay.
Although some people are calling it an iPhone 9, which I hate. I don't think that's a good idea. Again, people have fond memories of the iPhone SE, and calling it the SE 2 is just a way to cash in on that affection. That's sort of the theme of Particle Debris, is getting back to products that people really, really love instead of bitch about. It's going to be similar to the iPhone 8, according to Mark and Debbie.
But here's my question. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be an 8 size, like a 6, yeah. 7, 8 size iPhone, instead of the 5S that the original SE was.
Well, I forget how big the screen was on the SE, but I think it was 4.7.
It was I don't remember the dimensions, but it was a 6S phone. It was 6S insides with 5S outsides.
This one's going to have an A13 chip, so it's going to have a modern chip. Mm-hmm. The high power chip, and the price is going to be very favorable. There was no, the source that this Bloomberg connected to did not talk about a price, but the Bloomberg article points out that the original iPhone SE sold for $399.
Yep.
And so, and this phone is aimed at India, although it'll be popular in the US too, because it's a hard sell in India, where there's a lot of Android phones selling for under $200 in India. Apple's eager to break into the Indian market more successfully.
Yeah. Now, Andrew, are you an iPhone SE fan? That big, the 5S case, all of that?
Well, I never had the SE, but I do like that form factor with the... And this is kind of a similar form factor that the iPad Pro has now, which is those nice flat sides.
Yeah, the 90 really degree, like the square edge side, sort of. Yeah, I like it too. The thing I liked the best about the 5S was I could reach almost all of it with my thumb without having to readjust my hold on my phone. So if I wanted to use it in one hand, it was pretty easy. I have an 11 Pro now, and I can't do that. And I didn't like it any better when I got my 8, and I couldn't reach all of it with my thumb either. We won't even get to the pants pockets discussion, but the thing that I wonder about is that when the iPhone 8 came out, and when the iPhone 10 came out, when the iPhone 11 came out, everyone I know who has an SE, which is a non-zero number of people, was basically saying it's not small enough. I want a phone the size of my SE. Give me that. And, you know, basically, like, thanks, Apple, for saving me a bunch of money by not putting out what I want. I'm going to stick with what I have. And so I wonder, like, I feel like they almost have to have the SE 2 name on it, like you said, John, to cash in on the thing that people like. But if it's not going to be a 5S size phone, then it makes sense not to name it that. So I see it both ways, but it's still going to be frustrating to the people who want to upgrade from an SE to something more modern, but not something larger. So I think they might have an uphill battle by not making another smaller phone, because that's what everybody loves about it. I don't know anybody who uses one who thinks it looks better than the newer phones, or it performs better than the newer phones. It's literally all about this fits in my pocket, this fits in my hand, you know, that kind of thing.
The iPhone SE had a 4-inch screen. So this sounds like this new SE 2 is going to have a slightly larger screen than that, 4.7, according to Bloomberg.
Yeah, if it's the size of an iPhone 8, that's like the size of an iPhone 6 or an iPhone 7, which the SE people didn't buy. So... Because it was too big.
Mall, I see a lot of people walking in front of me, and they have phones that are hanging out of their pockets halfway. And I wonder, boy, all you need to do is sit down on that or bump into somebody and your phone's on the floor. And I can see how the case can be made for a phone that fits into your pocket more securely and it's easier to handle.
Well, in regular
market for the original iPhone SE had about 2 or 3% of Apple's total market share. still it was beloved and highly.
Yeah, it had two or 3% of the market share and about 50% of the adoration that people had for iPhones. Like, no joke. Because the 6 came out and the 6S came out and they were that bigger size with the rounded edges. And the 5S people were like, no. So, you know, we got the 6 and the 6S. And then just after the 6S was when the SE came out. And they were like, yes, that's the right size. I want that. And so I can get a new chip and like newer insides with the same outsides. That's my favorite. I win. I'm getting that phone. And so like the people who have them really deeply love them. And it's part of, I think, why that rumor doesn't go away is that there's a lot of people clinging to it, hoping that there will be a new one. So we'll have to see.
And unlike the iPod, it'll have a Touch ID and the home button.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Which it has to, if it's a phone, it has to have that.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the SE had, was Touch ID. So I'm into it. Team home button, like, there may be hope for you yet. Here's hoping. We'll see. I'm interested. And John, I love Particle Debris. I read it every week. Particle Debris pulls together some of the stories from the week that maybe didn't get a whole bunch of attention at the time. And I love your take on what those things are. So I'm always glad to read it. So you can go check out Particle Debris. We will have a link to it in the show notes.
Published later today.
Yeah, it will be later today in the show notes. But in the meantime, I would like to thank our sponsor today. Our sponsor is Lightstream. Lightstream wants to refinance your credit card balances and help you save with a credit card consolidation loan. You can get a rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay. This is way lower than the average credit card interest rate, which is usually over 20% APR. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000. There are zero application, origination, or transaction fees. There's no prepayment penalty. So if you do get out ahead of it, you're in great shape. You can apply right on your phone, and you might even get your money the same day you applied. Lightstream wants to give you a low rate and great service. If you have good credit, that's what they want to do for you. Just for my listeners, if you apply now, you can get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/TDO. That's lightstream.com/TDO. You can get an additional discount on a credit card consolidation loan. lightstream.com/TDO. Here comes the disclaimers. Subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply. Offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/TDO for more information. We'd like to thank Lightstream for sponsoring the show today. Now, our other topic today is a thing that we're sort of officially rolling out today, which is Friday. And we're, for lack of a better name at the moment, we're calling it Security Friday. And this is a thing where Andrew comes on the show and talks to us about a little bit of the security news of the week. And then when we have one, we will share a tip with you, a small actionable thing that you can do to make your stuff more secure. So, Andrew, let's start with some of the news this week in security.
Yeah. So first off, Charlotte wrote this up as a link teaser. You may have heard sometime last year, Jeff Bezos' phone got hacked. He had some pictures leaked, and we have some recent news saying that it was because of WhatsApp, and he was talking to the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Mm-hmm. I hope that's how you say it.
I think so. MBS is a common way to refer to him.
Yeah, so it sounds like MBS sent him some kind of a malicious file that once it was on Mr. Bezos's phone, it immediately started gathering all his data and sending it to some kind of server that they had control over. Mm-hmm. And some reports say that I think Mr. Bezos was using an iPhone 10.
Okay. Now, what I saw, I don't remember the name of the hack itself, but I do remember seeing that it did say this particular malware and this attack vector by using WhatsApp to send somebody a thing works on Android as well. It works on Android and on iOS. Uh-huh. And then, you know, reading this, like when I was reading more information about this week, Andrew, one of the things that made me wonder was if it was really MBS. Like, it could have been. Like, I'm not saying it wasn't, but could it also have been someone impersonating his phone in order to send this and know that Bezos would accept it? And
yeah, that's possible.
You know, because like, if all of it's going to be kind of iffy, like all of it could be iffy. Like, maybe it wasn't officially him. Maybe he gave the okay to someone else to perpetuate, to perpetrate like they were him. Maybe he didn't give that okay, and yet the government decided like this was the thing to do. Like, we don't know. But mm-hmm. when I was reading it, it just sort of left me with a bunch more questions. I did read, I think Kaspersky has a write-up of the software itself. And like I said, I don't remember the name of what this particular hack is. It's been mentioned a number of places, so I know you can find it. I'll try to put a link in the show notes. And it's, I think it's like a video. Like, you send a video to somebody via WhatsApp, and they don't even have to click on it. As long as they open WhatsApp and it's sitting there or something, then it will start picking up information and like scooping up everything it can off your phone and sending it back to a server somewhere else.
Yeah. I forget what the name of this type of hack is called. It's like a kind of an automatic deal. This was an infected video file, and I'm not sure if Bezos even had to open the message. As soon as it was on his phone, it started doing its work, which is the scary thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the part that to me is sort of the worst of it. Is that, like, there's a lot of, you know, I got a weird looking attachment to an email and I clicked on it, and then bad stuff happened on my computer or on my phone, yeah. Right? And if you don't have to do anything, that's worse. Like that's even scarier. It's, you know, if all you have to do is send it and have it live there, that is sort of frustrating, I think, because there's nothing you could do about that. Like, if somebody sends it to you, that what else are you gonna do? You know.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. It looks like, I found the name of it. I think it's called Pegasus. Is the bit of malware that we're talking about here? Yeah. So. That was not great news. And part of it is because, like I said, there's no defense mechanism against something like this. So, what else do you have for this week?
Yeah, so this is something I wrote up couple days ago. It turns out Google found some flaws in Safari related to Safari's intelligent tracking prevention feature.
Uh-oh.
Now, before anyone panics, it was already patched, I think, in last December.
Okay.
Yes. And
I don't remember, I don't know, like, all the details about this. It's, like, a little bit over my head, all mm-hmm. the, you know, pro-gamery stuff. But basically, it let malicious people kind of track Safari users, what they're browsing, and so basically rendering ITP pretty much useless, because that's something that's supposed to prevent. Because one of the members of WebKit, they published a blog post back in December, and it was called Preventing Tracking Prevention Features or something like that.
Okay.
And so I guess it's just because of the way ITP works, it kind of, someone had called it a state thing where it kind of like stores a list of something and then it learns from that over time. I wish I could like explain this better, but that's basically the gist of it.
Mm-hmm.
But basically these people could create a persistent fingerprint about you.
Okay.
But it's been patched already.
Well, that's good news. At least this is one that we don't have to worry about quite as much. So that's, I would take that one as good news. So today in good security news, we've got.
And I also want to point out that at first I thought it was Google's Project Zero team, because that is Google's newish kind of security team that finds these kind of flaws in other people's products.
Mm-hmm.
But someone from Google actually reached out to me on Twitter, and it is Security Enhancements for the Web. That is their team. So shout out to them. You guys did a great job.
Yes, absolutely. And it's interesting to sort of watch the competition find this stuff and try to you know, try to bring attention to it. So I will point out the thing I pointed out last time. We had a Google team that pointed out a flaw in Apple software, which is, I don't know that I remember seeing Google finding Google flaws being quite as publicized. I would like to think that they're still doing it, but I don't see any like information about that, like Google coming out and publishing like, here's the thing that we found and we fixed, and like, you know, because that would look good for them. Like, we found it and we fixed it. It's all taken care of. You don't have to worry anymore.
Yeah, I think they do that with Chrome, I want to say, but I'm not sure about Android or anything else.
Yeah, like I've seen it with, I think I've seen stuff about Chrome, but I don't remember seeing anything like, there's this vulnerability in Android and we found it, we took care of it, and you should know that it's been taken care of. So because I'm for that no matter what operating system we're talking about, Windows Phone, Fire Phone, like whatever it is, like I don't care. It should be something where, because one of the best tools we have against, you know, these kinds of attacks is awareness, which is why we talk about it here on the show and talk about it enough that we are now debuting Security Friday. So do you have a tip for us today, Andrew, is an actionable item that we can all, as homework, that we can take with us?
Yeah, it's a pretty simple tip. So a way to make your iPhone harder to get broken into by Cellebrite or someone else is, instead of using the default 6-number passcode, I forget which version of iOS introduced this, but you can add a alphanumeric, which means letters and numbers, as a passcode. And yeah, it is a bit cumbersome to have to type this in every single time, but I think it's a good way to increase your security if that's what you want.
Well, and the other thing to think about is that in real terms, most people aren't entering this every day. Like, that's the first part of it, is if you have a long, complex passcode and you have, if you're running, I want to say iOS 12 or higher, because I don't remember where the Touch ID cutoff is. But if you're running iOS 12 or higher, you have a phone that either has Touch ID, so you can use your thumb to enter a passcode in lieu of entering a passcode, or you have something that will use Face ID, so you just have to look at it in order to unlock your phone. And so only if you restart it, or it's been a certain amount of time that you haven't unlocked it, that it will want you to unlock it, then if you think about it in practical terms, most people aren't entering that passcode even one time a day. So it makes sense for it to be something a little bit longer. And remember, longer is stronger. So even like, you know, it started becoming a default 6-digit number way back, like iOS 9, I think. iOS 9 or iOS 10 was when it started defaulting to put in your 6-digit thing, and then it was sort of hard to change it if you really wanted it to be a 4-digit number. And then I don't remember when, that may have been also when alphanumeric came, I don't remember. But you definitely, like most people, if you have everything set up, and I would say here's the corollary to that one. If you're not using the Touch ID on your phone or the Face ID on your phone, set that up, because it's very easy, it's very convenient, and it literally only works for you. That's one good way to keep other people out of your phone, is to make sure that the passcode isn't the same, and that you're using something that only you have, like your thumb.
So. Well, it is convenient, but I would say if you're like maybe next level, you want some privacy, I would say maybe consider disabling Touch ID and Face ID, just because most of the time, I think if in court, you can invoke the Fifth Amendment, and because if that information, I wrote about this before, this is off the top of my head, but basically a passcode that you remember, it's in your brain, telling them is self-incrimination, but biometric information is treated as like just standard evidence that they can collect.
So they can compel you to stick your thumb on the button or whatever. One thing
Andrew, I did some math here while you were talking. If you have 6 numbers from 0 to 9, that's a million combinations. But if you have six alphabetic numbers, it's 26. Or actually, it's 36 because you can have the alphabetic plus numbers. Mm-hmm. It goes to 308 million if it's just 26. Let me see, 36 in there.
I love that John is doing math right now on the show as we are talking about this to help people.
To 2 billion combinations.
It's what?
From just up to 2 billion combinations.
Wow.
As opposed to just 1 million possibilities for a 10-digit number and six 10-digit numbers. Yeah. So it makes it significant, thousand times more difficult to hack.
Yeah.
And there are websites you can just search for, like, password tester, and you can put a password in there, and then they can give you an estimate of how long it will take to hack.
Yeah. It's nice to have those, I think. Mm-hmm. Definitely, like, pay a little bit of attention. Do something about your passcode over the weekend, whatever it is. Maybe you need to change it to something new that's a little bit longer, you know, tack something on the end or something. Maybe help set someone up with a better passcode if you know somebody who's still using four digits, or you know somebody who never got around to setting up Touch ID. It's weird, it's hard. Spend a little time and help them out, and maybe you can help them get that data preserved. That's a good idea. So if you have tips for us that we could be sharing with people on Security Fridays, if there's something you want to make sure that we talk about, then please let us know. Observations@macobserver.com. If we get a lot of feedback, we will have a Security Friday mailbag edition at some point. Talk about the stuff that y'all have submitted. If you want to talk to us on Twitter, you can get us at TMO Daily, and you can always leave us comments in the show notes. Thank you so much, both of you, for being here today. John, thanks for coming by to talk to us about particle debris. Like I said, I love it.
Thanks for having me.
And also, Andrew, thank you for being here to help us with Security Friday, making this a thing.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad you're with me. And I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you on Monday about new and exciting topics. Have an awesome weekend. And during that weekend, be excellent to each other.